Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. Thank you for coming back to my channel. I'm speaking about the last Shah of Iran, who was overthrown in 1979, went abroad initially, he said, for medical treatment. He was suffering non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, went to various countries, Panama, did the United States refuse him entry, and then was buried in Egypt eventually. I can't remember where he died. I've even been to the mosque in Cairo where he was buried, a Shia mosque, because it was ruled by a Shia dynasty, Egypt, centuries ago. Anyhow, I've attended enough Iranian dissident demonstrations in the United Kingdom calling for the downfall of the mullahs, and they very often display images of the late Shah of Iran, or and indeed the current Shah of Iran. So despite the romance of modern Iranian dissidents with Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, this mustn't blind us to just how hated he was at the time. And that he was an absolute monarch. And there were major grievances about various things, about the lack of political freedom, about a widespread pauperism, and about religious issues as well, and so forth. So, I mean, he was a secular ruler. There are certain things to be said in his favor. And it reminds me that the choice in politics is so often is not between bad and good, it's between bad and worse. And it is true, he was not as bad as what followed, but people didn't know that. Some people have hoped for real democracy or something like that. Communists hoped for communism. They thought that was the way forward and so on. So it really wasn't clear that the religious reaction would win out. But anyway, the theocrats did, because illiteracy actually is still quite high in Iran in 1979. And these complex notions of like representative government or indeed Marxist-Leninism were not widely understood. But there was one thing everybody knew about, and that was Islam. So Shia Islam in 90% of the cases. So that had mass appeal. And so they were the ones who took over because, you know, more modern ideologies were largely an urban thing and so forth. So, you know, he and his court, they dressed in Western style. They consumed alcohol. I'm not sure they ate pork. He occasionally made a display of piety. He went on Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, in his white robes and so forth. He didn't wear a beard. If people wanted to go to the mosque, they're free to do so. If they wanted to eat halal, nobody stopped them. If they wanted to observe Ramadan, they could do so. They could pray as much as they wanted. Women could wear hijab if they wished, but it certainly wasn't enforced. And but this dressing in knee-length skirts or whatever, going to nightclubs, that did go on, but that's more like for upper-middle-class Tehranites, which was a tiny minority of the population. So deep in the countryside, I'm saying that, you know, 1979, things hadn't changed for centuries. But yeah, it really was a shock to the haute bourgeoisie of Tehran when they had to regress centuries because of the Islamic Revolution. And the Iranian Islamic Revolution affected the Shia world, but the Sunni world really followed suit. Even Saudi Arabia in the 1970s, while certainly not liberal, was not quite as medieval as it was to become in the 1980s, a real backlash against a secularism. Anyway, so it was one party rule. So those so-called political parties they had, this is one man rule, political parties they had were really just shams. So dissent was not allowed. They had Savak, his secret police. So they surveilled the population, really limitless powers of stop and search, and without warrantless wiretapping, the right to open your mail. Remember, long before email, sending letters was far more important, and so on. So torture was used not uncommonly and things like that. So they used fear, perhaps I could even say terror, against dissidents. And the police and army sometimes opened fire on demonstrations right towards the end, and hundreds of people were killed, unarmed protesters and so on. So people say we have no peaceful way it means to achieve reform. Anyway, so people thought he was the pet of the West. Remember, he didn't have much dynastic legitimacy. Remember, his father was a cavalry officer, had overthrown the Qajar dynasty and kicked him out in 1925. And his father indeed had been pushed out in the Second World War because he wasn't going to help the Allies enough, was exiled to, I think it was, the Seychelles. So the teenage Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, been at school in Le Jude, Italy, came back, fluent in English and French. He ruled, a rather haughty, distant, frosty man. Married, was it twice or thrice? His first wife was incapable of bearing children. Okay, but he had very cordial relations with the United States and others. And there was even the Mohammad Mossadegh moment, was it in 1951, when this liberal-minded prime minister, when there's a majlis, Iran was a parliamentary, had a parliamentary government, was pushed out by large demonstrations, somewhat orchestrated by Kermit Roosevelt, the CIA, the grandson of President Theodore Roosevelt. And MI6 was involved as well. Winston Churchill, just become prime minister the second time, applauded it, often to do with Anglo-Iranian petroleum or whatever, that too much of the oil profits were going to the United Kingdom and other countries. But in the Cold War, he was a stalwart Cold Warrior on the Western side. He was an important source of oil and so on, and he was a very good customer for Western arms. And 1979, a lot of people lived in abject penury, and a huge amount of the state budget was spent on weaponry. So it was also going to be a formidable ally on the side of the United States if the Cold War, war turned hot. 1979, the Cold War still had 10 years left to go. Of course, people didn't realize it 10 years. It could have been much, much more. So Iran seemed to be an important asset in the Middle East, where there were a lot of anti-Western regimes around. You know, Khrushchev had a border with the Soviet Union, had access to the Arabian Gulf, and so forth. But anyway, so many Iranians thought he was a little more than a marionette of Uncle Sam. Some people didn't like this Occidental influence, felt it was corrupting, it was introducing immorality, you know, the women's liberation was really bad news, and Western pop culture and things like that. The Shah had his white revolution, white as in meant to be bloodless, white, I mean, also the sort of conservatism, taking some of the land off the biggest landlords, giving it to the peasants, so some popularity. The way he promoted gender equality, that really was a good thing, and secondary education, because, you know, in a madrasa in the countryside, people often used to learn little more than to recite the Holy Quran. He said, we've got to do more than that. And of course, the mullahocracy, the religious leaders didn't like this. This was obviously making them déclassé and making people question their religious doctrines. So some of the merchants, as well as the clergy, disliked it. Some of the royal communities felt it was interfering with their traditions and so on. So this was really imposition from him, and maybe applauded by the small segment of society that benefited from his rule, particularly Western-minded, secular, bourgeois people in Tehran. So although there was a lot of oil growth in the 1970s, after the oil shock of 1973, that wealth wasn't shared amongst the poor, and there was inflation and so on. So there was not an adequate accommodation. There was still really high child mortality. I was told by Iranians in the 1970s, sometimes wouldn't even register a child's birth at the age of one, because the chance of the child dying as an infant was just so high. So there was a lot of peculation, there was a lot of bribe taking. So people, most people felt excluded from good opportunities. And then when the economy turned south in 1977, that's when things really turned sour. Okay. Anyway, we won't go through the how the revolution came about, but then he had to flee. And yes, it did get an awful lot worse. But you've got to remember, he was widely reviled at the time. That he was overthrown for a reason. And this wasn't orchestrated by other countries. The United States really wanted him there, and they recognized they need some sort of reform. The Soviet Union, whilst fairly hostile to him, they weren't behind the revolution. Nobody said that. And their underlings, the communists, were not very popular and didn't come that near power. And nobody said some sort of outside country wanted it. You know, it had to be a Shia Islamic country. And Iran is the big daddy of Shia Islam. So that's why, you know, his son, the current claimant, should obviously be apologetic and recognize his father did something wrong. Very wrong, often said to be brutal. And of course, in Iran, everybody remembers the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh. Had he stayed there, might have developed into a full democracy. And indeed, Iran was invaded in 1942 by the Soviet Union, by the United Kingdom and India, then obviously under British control. Very, very few former Soviet people would know that. Almost no Britons know that. I can tell you every Iranian knows that. And they always think there's a plot that the Western countries, particularly the United Kingdom, is behind, even though the UK is greatly diminished in stature since the 1940s. Well, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallan7@gmail.com. Goodbye.